And welcome back, everybody. Welcome back to part two of this episode of Steelers Friday Night Six Pack. If you're watching me live on YouTube and Facebook, thank you for sticking with me. If you downloaded part two on the audio side, I appreciate that. I thank you for downloading the second half. And before I get into the second half of the show, I just want to pull up a comment from or a question from Jeff Dunn from Facebook, and he says, a lot of motion, two tight end sets, Ben under center. Well, those first two are certainly a staple of Matt Canada's offense, and you could take that to the bank because he loves motion, as we saw last year, earlier in the year, when he was the quarterback's coach and his fingerprints were not on the offense. A lot of jet sweeps, a lot of motion. Then that kind of went away as the year went along for whatever reason. There's a lot of speculation for why that went away, but it definitely went away. And of course, the two tight end sets, absolutely. Ben under center, that's a different story. I don't know. I mean, I think we can all agree that Ben's not that fond of being under center anymore. I think he certainly has a fondness for taking the snap out of the shotgun formation. So we'll have to see. I mean, he is 39 years old. He is, like a lot of quarterbacks of his stature and his longevity, set in his ways. He does have a lot of influence. He does have a lot of power within the organization. So we'll see just how much of Matt Canada's scheme is implemented in year one, when the old gunslinger is still here, and how much is left out and maybe saved until the old gunslinger rides off into the sunset, so to speak. So the first two, Jeff, definitely. The last one, I don't know. I don't know. I wouldn't bet on it, that's for sure. At least not right away. And let's see. I don't know what this means here. But Andrew Wilbar, one of our contributors, says, false start, everyone but the center. I don't know what that means. Maybe he's talking about Kendrick Green. I don't know. But I'm going to talk about some more about the draft, and that is the second part of the draft, the back end of the draft, and a player I'm really excited about, and that's Quincy Roche, the edge / outside linebacker from Miami by way of Temple. And here's a guy who was incredibly productive in college. He really was. I mean, he was the American Athletic Conference Defensive Player of the Year in 2019. He had 26 sacks during his time at Temple. And then he transferred to Miami for 2020. It was a bit of a weird year for everybody involved. And maybe that affected him. He had 4.5 sacks, but he was still a third team All-American, or All-Conference, I should say, in the ACC, which is a pretty darn good conference. So he made third team. So, I mean, there's somebody who might be able to do some damage here. I mean, certainly there's room behind T.J. Watt and Alex Highsmith as far as depth at outside linebacker. I think they definitely can use some depth there. They really don't have much in the way of bodies, really, even, you know, anybody proven. So here's somebody who's going to get his chance. I think even as a 6th round pick, he could come in, and who knows? I mean, we saw it with Vince Williams, who certainly didn't have even the pedigree of a Roche, even though they were both 6th round picks. I think Roche is kind of, he's coming into the pros with a little bit more, I guess, pedigree. Certainly a lot of people thought he should be drafted higher. So I'm really excited to see what he can do, you know, and that's the great thing about this draft is, you know, you weren't going to address every position with premium picks, but you know, if you could find some diamonds in the rough later on, like 4 through 7, then I think, you know, and maybe develop one or two of those players into a contributor, then I think you're doing okay. And, you know, I think we have to remember that not everybody on this draft class is going to amount to anything. In fact, probably most of them aren't. That's just how it is. You know, if they can find a superstar, a couple of starters, and maybe some contributors on special teams, you're ahead of the grade when it comes to most teams and their draft classes. So the other day, I was, after we did the hangover, somebody wrote on YouTube that I said, it was like some almost incoherent kind of thing, which is common for the internet. They said, "What do you mean seven starters? We're not going to find seven starters. You're crazy." And he put the crazy emoji thing, which to me tells me that you're crazy, but that's just my opinion. Anyway, I don't think I said anything like that, and I would never say anything like that, at least not on purpose, because you're not going to find seven starters in any draft class. And if you do, you're probably going to go on a 10-year run of being a Super Bowl contender, so good for you. So if you can find a few players from this draft class that become major contributors, you're doing a good job. And I think the way they addressed it, they spent their top three picks on three positions where starters can come in and contribute from day one. They used their two fourth-round picks on guys that maybe can develop into starters. The fifth-round pick, Loudermilk, I mean, I didn't get it. He seems a lot like Carlos Davis and Isaiah Bugs. And the fact that they traded a future fourth-round pick to move up into the fifth round to get him, it was kind of weird because they probably could have drafted him in the seventh round or even signed him as undrafted free agent. But I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt. I'm willing to see what this guy has. As I said, I'm not going to speak in absolutes when it comes to the draft. I'm not going to just automatically write this guy off. I mean, you know, to me, that's silly when anybody does that, you know, because it's just, you just don't know how these players are going to turn out. So, you know, he can maybe come in and at the very least, who knows, maybe he's a valuable backup for them, like an LT Walton was for many years, if you remember him. And of course, Roche, Trey Howard, Trey Norwood from Oklahoma, as Mike Tomlin called him, the Swiss Army knife, which tells me that they're looking for him to be a cornerback, a safety, nickel, dime. But he was a seventh round pick, so you know, if he makes it on special teams, he's ahead of the game. And then of course, Harvin the punter, who everybody's already loves. I mean, this big 260-pound punter who they showed him lifting weights, doing deadlifts in the gym. So he looks like he could potentially be a character. He won the Ray Guy Award last year, the first African-American punter ever to win the award. So that's pretty cool. So a lot of people are hoping that he beats out Jordan Berry, but I wouldn't bet on it just yet. Jordan Berry seems to have nine lives. And actually he's not really as bad. If you look at the overall stats, he's not the worst punter in the league. He's probably in the middle of the pack, but you know, again, that group think a lot of people are under the impression that he's the worst punter in the league, which really stats-wise, he's not. But there's certainly room for improvement, and maybe Harvin can be that guy. So those are my overall thoughts on the draft. Just want to touch a bit on the decision to not bring back, or not bring back, to not give Terrell Edmonds his fifth round, his fifth year. Well, I really mangled that. They declined to pick up Terrell Edmonds' fifth-year option, which would have amounted to $6.7 million. And when I first saw that, I was kind of surprised because I thought that was a pretty good rate for a starting safety, even one that's not a Pro Bowler. And if he does wind up on the open market, he's probably going to get around that for a yearly salary, for a base salary. So I don't know what the Steelers are hoping to get as far as a hometown discount from him, if they do work out a long-term deal, but it's probably not going to be much below 6.7. I'm guessing I just don't see it, but it's just, to me, it's just the thing that disappointed me about that is it's like just the overall, what appears to be a dismantling of the secondary already after a couple of years where it was a force. I mean, it took them forever to build the secondary into a respectable unit. And it was almost an elite unit for a while there. And now you know, Mike Hilton left, which we all saw coming, but still he was a valuable player. He's gone. You don't know how Cam Sutton's gonna come in and play that role. Or you don't know if he's going to have to be the outside guy now because they cut Steven Nelson. Kevin Colbert said on the Fan on Thursday that was definitely a salary cap move. So they didn't want to pay him the $8 million. So they cut him. And now Edmonds, you're declining to pick up his fifth-year option, which exposes him to free agency next year. So provided you don't work out a long-term deal before then. So the question is, what's the plan? You know, who's going to be your number two corner? If it's Cam Sutton, who plays the slot? You know, that's, you know, what do you do next year if you go in to the off season and you just have Fitzpatrick and Sutton as your only veterans under contract, because that's what your only proven veterans, I should say, under contract, because that's what it's going to be. Joe Hayden's going into the final year of his contract. You're not picking up Edmonds' final year. So what's the plan? You don't have much on the roster right now, at least in terms of proven players. People were excited about James Pierre, but he's unproven. Justin Lane is obviously unproven. They don't have much in the way of safety depth. They signed Arthur Millette from the Jets previously of the Jets today on Friday. Actually, he's a nice veteran, but he's not somebody who you would think would project as a long-term answer as the starter. As far as guys like Miles Killebrew, I mean, he's mostly a special teams guy up to this point of his career. So you don't have much there. So what's the plan? You could talk about all these undrafted free agents they brought in, guys like Shakur Brown, and yeah, that is quote unquote great draft value to get a guy like that, because he was the highest rated defensive back in the Big Ten according to according to Pro Football Focus in terms of coverage, anyway, coverage grade. But still, he was an undrafted free agent. And you know, Mark Gilbert, undrafted free agent, you know, another defensive back from Duke. Lamont Wade, a safety from Penn State. You know, these are nice. It's always exciting to when you find undrafted free agents that perhaps should have been drafted, but they're still, you know, you had all these teams that passed on them in the draft. So why did that happen? There has to be a reason. So, you know, it's funny, people talk about guys like, you know, guys like this as potential future starters, yet they freak out when you draft a running back in the first round. So it's kind of funny. So that's just, I'm a little concerned about the Edmonds thing, because I think, you know, a lot of people, you know, I read when I wrote my article, somebody said he stinks. He does not stink. He might not be Troy Polamalu, but he doesn't stink. They rely on him to do a lot of things. They relied on him last year to cover the tight end specifically. So at least that's my understanding. So that serves a valuable role right there, because they've had so many problems with that over the years. So he doesn't stink. The question is, who can they, if they can't sign him to a deal, who can they bring in to replace him, and what will they have to pay? Because guys like Sean Davis, when his first foray into free agency back in 2020, he got a deal for $4 million a year. I mean, you're talking about saving $2 or $3 million in 2022, I guess it would be, to bring in a new safety. Is that really worth it if it's a major downgrade? I don't know. So those are my thoughts for tonight, and I will end the show by taking some questions and comments. So let's see what you guys have. And here's Ben Tavares, and he says, Nelson, one-year deal. And I wouldn't mind that. And, you know, people talk about him being average. I think it's a little revisionist history, because he spent his 2 years here getting pretty decent reviews by just about everybody. And all of a sudden, he leaves and he's average, which is not true. If you can get him at a reduced price, I think you should go for it, because it's not easy finding starting caliber corners in the NFL, especially the Steelers. So if they can find a way to mend defenses with Steven Nelson, even for one more year, I think they should really seriously do that. And this is from Jeff Dunn, who says he is underachieved, which that's kind of weird, because a lot of people said he was a reach. He should have been drafted in the second round. He's been a starter ever since his rookie year, so I don't think he's underachieved. He's gotten better each year. I mean, I don't think anybody expected Terrell Edmonds to be Ronnie Lott or Troy Polamalu or anybody like that. They just expected him to be a pretty good to even great strong safety. He hasn't reached the great part yet, but I think he's been pretty good. You know, it's like Dave Schofield said, if he was a second round pick, people wouldn't have zero problem with Troy Edmonds. And what I find funny about them not wanting to pick up the $6.7 million for his fifth-year option is they were more than happy to pick up Bud Dupree's fifth-year option for $9 million. And he had a pretty decent run-up to that point, probably a lot better than people thought. He had 20 career sacks going into 2019. But a lot of people were upset that they picked up that $9 million. So they were perfectly fine with doing that. But they didn't want to pick up Edmonds' fifth-year option for 6.7. So it's Kevin Colbert said it was for salary cap reasons, but you know, you're going to have more room next year. Maybe not as much room as it looks right now, because you're going to have to work out some deals for T.J. Watt and Fitzpatrick and who knows what else. But you're certainly going to have more room than they've had in a while, and you would think they'd be able to find room for a starting strong safety who's still going to be in his mid-20s. That's just my opinion. Here's one from Donald Nolan. He says, Tony, between all the DBs you just mentioned, do you think we got a guy that can fill the nickel dime role to keep Sutton on the outside? I don't know. A lot of people were excited about Shakur Brown. I mean, there's somebody, I don't know if he can play the slot. I don't know what his strengths are as a corner. I just know that he graded pretty highly, and he was projected to go in the middle portion of the draft. People were talking about Antoine Brooks being able to fill that role. The guy from Maryland who they drafted in the sixth round last year, somebody I didn't even consider, but he was also considered somebody who didn't necessarily have a position. So maybe he's another jack of all trades, Swiss Army knife, who can fill that role. I don't know. That's the great thing about the NFL is so many of these draft picks, they make great leaps from their first to second year. Maybe Antoine Brooks can be that surprise guy to do that. As far as the new guys, I don't know. I mean, this Arthur Millett, if I'm saying his name right, I know he has position flexibility. From what I saw on the internet when I researched him before the show, he's played some safety and he's played some corner in this day. So, so maybe he's a possibility. He's still in his 20s, so it's not like he's totally over the hill, but he's definitely a journeyman. And here's one from Andrew Wilbar. And he says, Tony, would you sign Eric Fisher if he can fit under the salary cap? An O-line with Fisher, Dotson, Green, DeCastro, and Banner sounds really good. I know he was the first overall pick not long ago. The only question about him is why the Chiefs cut him. I know he struggled mightily last year, at least the Chiefs line did. I don't know because the defending AFC champions just got rid of him. So I don't know if he seems like somebody that might be kind of like in the same boat as Villanueva. He's a cast off and it seemed like he'd be somebody that would want a, just because of his reputation anyway, would want a fairly decent salary. He wouldn't want a vet minimum. I don't know. I think they're committed to finding out about Shooks and Banner, and if they can't make it work, then you have Joe Haig as the backup and somebody that who's a veteran who could man either one of those positions if they needed him to, at least for the rest of for the majority of the 2021 season. So I probably wouldn't do it, because I mean, even if I wanted to do it, I don't think they're going to do it, because I think they're committed to those guys. So Thank you for that question. And here's Original Ox, and he says, is Shooks our left tackle of the future? Well, I was listening to the Colbert interview on The Fan on Thursday, and I mean, you know, he's a former third-round pick, so maybe Kevin Colbert's biased, and he wants to look good after making that pick in 2018. But he said that they always felt that he could be a better left tackle, and that was a sentiment when he came out of college, that he would make a better left tackle than a right tackle. I don't know much about offensive line play, but all I can tell you is that's been the popular sentiment. So all I can say is they're definitely going to give him the first crack at it. He's going to get the first shot. In fact, Colbert said, and you can take this with a grain of salt, but he said on Thursday that if week one was today, that Shooks would be the starting left tackle. But you know, obviously there's a lot that could happen between now and week one. Like Andrew brought up, signing a veteran like an Eric Fisher. Maybe Dan Moore is this year's Kevin Dotson, and he impresses so much in training camp that he's the starter, because you know he came out of the draft with the reputation of being a pure left tackle. And of course, there's Joe Haig. So I don't know. Overall, I really like what the Steelers did, and I'm looking forward to OTAs, whoever shows up for that. Certainly the rookie camp and the mini camp, and of course training camp. That's when the real fun begins. One thing I'll say about the draft is I've always learned to sort of get excited about the new draft class, even if I didn't know who most of them were, which I every year I don't know. I knew this year. I knew obviously Najee Harris, and I knew Freiermuth. The other seven had no clue, but after learning about them a little bit, I'm kind of excited to see what they can do. So the next few months are going to be spent getting excited about these draft picks and learning more about them. And then once the end of July hits and training camp commences, then we're really going to find out about what they're made of, at least initially, you know. So on that note, I will bid you all adieu, and I thank you for joining me. As always, I thank you for the questions. I thank you for the participation. Just Me, thank you again for the $5 donation. I will talk to you guys. I think I'll be on – I'm going to be – actually, I should tell you, I'll be on Touchdown Under with Mark Davidson. I'll be filling in Saturday night. So please tune in to that. Hopefully I'll be less hyper than I am tonight, and I'll talk a little slower, but please stay tuned to that. And if you don't catch me there, catch me on Monday on The Hangover. Until then, you guys have a great weekend. Goodbye, everybody. Go Steelers.